You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. And we do love you. This is Kauai Soapbox and with Felicia and Marshall. And today we have a couple of guests on a whole bunch of different topics. And one of our guests is a woman named Emma Clifford. She'll be coming in the second portion of the show talking about all this free spay and neuter they're doing this week. Kind of reminds me a little bit of Tropicare or something, because you can bring your animals in, no cost, at the Kauai Humane Society. We'll be talking about that. I'm expecting Kaimi Hermasura to come in at some point. We'll be talking about the Hokulea and the Namahoi coming into Hanalei this weekend. You know, the community is, we're saying, put the kahea out, getting people to help do a really righteous welcome for these wonderful va'a sailing canoes that are coming in, and then a host of political topics. Hey, Marshall.
Hey, Felicia. Aloha.
Aloha. So Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Stores, Pono Pies, and the Kauai Juice Company. And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. So I heard we had a call in saying that the Namahoi is definitely not coming. We'll see. I'm expecting a call from one of the captains of the canoe. And, you know, that had come up in a meeting last night with the Namahoi crew. So I'm not on the crew. So we'll see, you know. But so there is a hope for what can be here. And I'm forgetting the name of the other Anakalio. No, what's the name of the other canoe?
Hikianalia,
I think. Yeah, that one did part of the round the world voyage. Yeah.
And where's the home base for Hikianalia? I'm testing you.
I believe it's New Zealand, Aotearoa.
Oh, okay.
So that is one of the. There was seven that came into the community, but why don't you look it up, Marshall?
All right.
So, because I didn't realize the Hikianalia was coming in, but what we can say relative to that is that so many of our kupuna that we love so dearly, who have been the ones that have really hosted, bringing in and receiving, or led the hosting of receiving these canoes in the past. Like I'm thinking of our Auntie Kalehua Ham Young, Uncle Bobo, certainly Auntie Kapeka Chandler, many people who have been some of the lead people doing it in the past have moved on to heaven. They're not with us now, and so it's the next generation who is rising up and is putting out the word to get us all ready so that we do a beautiful job in being able to celebrate them coming in. And it usually takes a few days. We'll hear a little bit more about that as we have guests in and calls in on the studio, but we will do some work on that.
So the Hikianalia was designed for the worldwide voyage following a template created by Salthouse Boat Builders and used by the Okeanos Foundation for the Sea, which commissioned the seven Waka Moana of the Pacific Voyagers in Aotearoa. Please forgive
Aotearoa,
me.
Aotearoa, that's New Zealand. Aotearoa.
Okay. A sail path between Aotearoa and Hawaii was rekindled in 1985 when Hokulea sailed there and established an ongoing relationship with Maori.
The Maori.
Maori.
Yes, the Maori community. Those are the traditional people of New Zealand. And we received seven canoes a few years back. That was a wonderful experience. And the community really came out, you know, people all over with food. And so when these canoes are here, you know, they usually stay a few days. They don't just sail in and sail out the same day. It's sort of a big deal. And it's not confirmed that any of them will necessarily be able to make it, because we have to watch for how the conditions are. We're getting close to October. They've done this worldwide voyage. I was there on Oahu for the receiving of
the Malama Honua voyage, which means, you know, love the earth. It was just so powerful and so meaningful. And the point is that that voyage isn't really over till it comes around to all the different places that wished it well and helped to help set the voyage off. And then my understanding is really even afterwards they want to continue the voyaging, like going down to Tahiti. And it's not a one-time thing. It is keeping celestial navigation alive, keeping the skill set that's been developed on that alive and working well for all of us. So that's a great thing.
It's really great. It's so exciting, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to see just fleets of Hawaiian canoes sailing around the world.
Yeah, well, it's a dangerous voyage.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous voyage, but definitely, you know, we have a lot of learning and room to go with that. And so among the issues that have been up, you know, this week, I always get a lot of calls for what people would like to have covered on this show. And one piece that is a big issue is what happened with the Hanalei Beach. And probably the same caller who called in to correct that the Namahoy is not likely to be here. I invite her in to call in at 826-7771 if she would like to set me straight on yet another topic. And that topic is the Hanalei Pier. And they have wanted to shut off the beach to cars parking down there for probably at least 3, if not 4 years. So when we had the shoreline break away this week, they came and they put rocks up and a swinging gate there. I haven't actually gone down to look at it. Have you seen it yet?
No, and I haven't seen the beach either. But have you seen that?
Well, I've seen the pictures, and, you know, yeah, it's definitely washed away. I used to live right there. I mean, every year, pretty much, you know, the beach goes out, the beach comes back in. That's what beaches do.
Right.
We have erosion, and it's called accretion and erosion. And so sometimes the accretion of that beach, you know, is a couple few hundred yards. It can go really far out. And, you know, when they were discussing stopping the parking in there, a couple times I went down and counted the amount of cars that were there around sunset. And I think, you know, I've counted between 150 and maybe 170 cars.
It's a party.
It is a whole cultural site, you know, a community site. It's where people come to gather. And, you know, does it probably leave some oils or something like that on the beach? I'm sure it does. Is it a totally environmentally sound practice? No, I don't think it is. I mean, it can't be. But what is also the case is if they're parking a little bit further up on the dirt, it's still going to be flushing and washing down into there. We hardly have a bathroom at that park any longer. I've attended some parties there, and the weed whacking, I mean, the weeds will get up to 4 feet tall before they get cut down, usually by whoever is using that parcel just to the Hanalei town side of the pier. Mm. I mean, the county obviously is a little overextended at being able to manage taking good care of the park. I was at Kekaha Beach Park this weekend. And it, you know, I used to go to Mexico a lot, and it kind of reminded me of that, you know, the condition of the bathrooms. Like, they just have outhouses, porta-potties, but the porta-potties don't even have any of the features inside that have that little flushing mechanism. So you walk in, and, you know, you're seeing a floating pile of whatever has been there used for the whole, however long it takes between when they're cleaned up. But it is... it's filthy in there, and not typically any toilet paper, or at least there wasn't when I was there.
Right.
So, you know, we don't have much money for managing these parks, and, you know, it's tough to sit there and see them block that off because, you know, we look at how much poisons or other things that are allowed to be in there. And in fact, like when I was in Kekaha too, I really had a wonderful time. The sky was amazing, just amazing. Watching the falling stars and the planets, everything else like that. It was beautiful. Saw the space station go by.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like,
what a night.
You know, it's like to see a sky without clouds is something kind of not that common on the North Shore. And seeing the Southern Cross, it was really beautiful.
Yeah, and there was a lot going on in the sky.
There was a lot going on in the sky, so it was very entertaining and an incredible moonrise, like in the very early morning. But during the night, there was, you know, routine trucks driving up and down the beach, and then
pickup trucks.
Well, I don't. Yeah, you know, trucks.
And they weren't like maintenance trucks.
No. They're just people's vehicles. And when I look at the beach in the morning, it's tire tracks everywhere. And thinking, you know, you could get run over if you weren't careful in the night, like being on the beach. But it's like a little highway down there, so it can feel arbitrary, like what's tolerable, what's not tolerable. And I think the thing that is really rough with looking at what happens when we deny a community one of their very last vestiges of being able to hang together, mm-hmm. The damage that happens ripples much further out. It is much deeper than, okay, we don't have anything to do at night and play. What I see that is so important right there is that families come. You know, you see the pop-up tent, the, you know, tailgate party, the teenagers, and maybe, you know, the more able people in the family are out there surfing the bowl. The babies and the toddlers are playing in the shore break. Somebody's cooking. Somebody who can hardly walk is sitting in a chair, maybe strumming some music. It's a multi-generational experience, and for people who maybe aren't so blessed to have a big family, it's still a place where you would go and you would hang and you'd see the community, and the main emphasis is not a drinking environment. It doesn't come with a price tag. It's a free place for people to be. And people say, oh, you know, they can just go park in the lot across the street that was condemned from the Sheehan's. So now they got a public parking kind of space there for overflow parking, and they want to put more in there. But again, I used to live right there. That's no different than what the Sheehan's were doing, right? So they spent some $6 million or something like that to take that piece of park away, and it floods. It can flood 4 feet deep right in there. And if they pave that, it's going to add more problem to the flooding. If they fill it for a campsite, it's going to have more problem for how, when it does flood and it washes one way out. Like next to the pier, there is a park that I think is the Hodges family basically donated over, but that was an expensive piece of property that they bought. They mistakenly went in there and tore a very big tree out. Mm-hmm. And the next big rain, it turned it into a little river and just completely eroded that area out. But what has happened, if you go inland from Vecke Road there, other big expensive houses have now been built in there, and they fill up. So every time you put fill in to up the grade so it's no longer a wetland right there, it pushes the flood zone around into these other areas. So that's a challenging spot. And okay, here's the thing. If they force the people off the parking on the beach, and let's just say, okay, so they can go over and park in what was the Sheehan's property, the amount of visitor vehicles that are down there is so overwhelming, they will just park over there. The visitors don't typically drive out on the beach. It's like the place to be. And right now, even when the waves have cut away at the beach, so there's not the beach parking area, it has, I got a call coming in. When it's cut away at the beach parking area, you can see that there is a lot less room available for people to be able to park. And so, not surprisingly, the area is a lot more visitors, a whole lot less local. So it's a profound problem, and I welcome the calls that might come in. I've had several people call me with a pretty serious and angry rant over how abused they feel over this change. So you're welcome to call in at 826-7771. Aloha, you're on the air.
Terry, are you there?
Hello there.
Hi.
Hi, Felicia. This is Terry Lilly.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. So you must have heard what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Actually, I'm just driving back from Hanalei right now. I just, as you know, I've lived down there almost right on the beach for 10 years.
Yes.
And I just got done doing some dives out in Hanalei Bay and a full video survey of the beach. So just to give you a little bit of an update. And, you know, I think that what everyone is kind of missing here a little bit is Mother Nature is going to kind of do one up over all of us. And I don't think anyone likes the beach as much as I do. And I support people parking down there, and I love the culture. And I've spent 10 years of my life down there on that beach. But as of right now, the beach is gone. All the way to the bedrock underneath the sand is exposed right now. And the county's taking down the ironwood trees. And
why are they taking down? Why are they taking down the ironwood trees?
Well, I think they're. I'm not sure why they're taking down the ironwood trees, but you'd have to talk to the county because they do strange things.
Okay.
But the bottom line is that if you watch these new high tides that we're having, all of this has been predicted. We have these king tides. We're having these higher high tides, and it's going to get higher and higher high tides. Just simply with the rising sea levels. And that really pushes back on the Hanalei River. And the pressure going back up the river is causing the river then to try to meander to the right or the left. And the river can't meander to the right because the county years ago put all of those giant rocks in. So the river is just meandering to the left and taking out part of Black Pot Beach and the beach. And, you know, I don't think there's any way of stopping it unless we actually opened up and dredged the river mouth and got it flowing in the way that it used to flow. But right now, I mean, I was just down there at high tide and there's zero beach left. The roots of the trees are exposed. The bedrock's exposed. And with these current high tides, I don't think the beach is ever going to come back. Unless
how is that?
Management thought on taking care of the river itself and cleaning it out and getting the flow rate to go back out to sea.
Well, what I do know is that a long time ago when I lived in that area, I at least watched a few times when the river mouth opening was unblocked with an excavator. You know, they take a handful of bites out of it till it sort of self-regulates. It's just like making a stationary wave. You know, eventually the river itself just flushes the whole thing out. It was kind of fun to watch.
Yeah.
And my understanding is in traditional times, managing the opening of the river mouth was a regular skill set almost anywhere on the island.
Absolutely. It's mandatory. You know, Felicia, it's if people just understand rivers, rivers meander back and forth. That's what they do. If you go down to Wainiha, 1 month out of the year, you'll have the river flowing out on the left side of the bay. 2 months later, it'll flow out on the right side of the bay. The Hanalei River should meander. Now, once it's stabilized, like it has been for the last, you know, 70, 80, 90 years, then you have to constantly dredge it, constantly keep the flow up. That's part of management of the ecosystem of a river. You know that years ago, you know, 20 years ago, the flow rate out of Hanalei River was about 4,000 meters a second of water. Now it's about 1,000 meters a second of water. It's so clogged up that the high tide now is putting back pressure into the river, which is going to take out the park. It's going to flood the boatyard. It's going to ruin the whole Black Pot Beach area. This is like pure, simple physics. If we don't manage and keep the river open, these are going to be part of the ramifications of it. And with the rising sea levels, it's only going to make the scenario worse.
Okay. Well, I'm listening, and I appreciate that. And I hope that that's not exactly how it ends up happening. I mean, I've seen, like, you saw how far away, like, in fact, I walked out there with you a few years back.
You bet.
How far out it was all stuck out there. There was a very big beach, very, very big beach.
Yeah. See, Felicia, most of the stuff, I've just, as you know, I'm underwater and on the beach and documenting it day by day, and I share all this information with the engineers that work with the Sea Grant program at UH and with NOAA, and they work this information into their sea level rise models. And most of the scientists have predicted that the beach at Hanalei would be gone, the park would be gone, because the river is clogged up and the sea levels are rising. This is this isn't a political issue or an issue about whether we like or don't like people to park on the beach. This is basically an engineering, a hydrology issue that has been predicted to happen. It's falling into place exactly like it's been predicted. And it is preventable if we want to look at the engineering and the science and deal with actually fixing the problem. It's going to help the reefs, it's going to help the environment, and it's going to help save what little beach that we have left.
So that's dredging the river must be what fixes it.
Absolutely, 100%. You can't take a river and stabilize it. You know that.
Yeah, I know.
The moy and the fish that go in and out of the river to lay their eggs in front of the Sheehan's property,
mm-hmm.
they can't even get in and out of the river for a long time to go in and lay their eggs because it was so shallow and filled with sediment. So this is a good management procedure to help save the environment, the fish, and also help save the park and the beach there. It's all fixable if we just would all work together and use some good modern science to analyze the problem and work on fixing it all together.
Well, thank you for what you do, and thank you for calling in and sharing that. And hopefully
went down there today. I just did all of this survey work and all these pictures. I'm going to post them on Facebook tonight and talk about it.
We're
driving home and heard your conversation.
Okay, so post it on my wall. Post it
on
my wall.
The radio, but
okay. Post it on my wall so I see it.
I definitely will. So once again, I appreciate what you're doing here.
Okay, thank you. Take
care. Alrighty, aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air. Can you turn your radio off, please?
Oh,
or down?
There we go.
Good, good.
Well, this is your loyal old Kamaaina Kupuna calling. I want to follow Terry with a little bit about what the Hanalei River mouth was like in 75 or so years ago.
Okay, how was it?
Well, it was a whole lot different. If you remember the story about Hanahano saved Judge Rice's life.
Yes.
Judge Rice gave him a sampan. And in those days, the channel from coming in Hanalei Bay into the river and alongside the ironwood trees that were growing into the soil right next to the water. I mean, it was right, the roots were right there. It was deep enough he could put the sampan in there and anchor it and whatever. And then Wiliakana also had a sampan. He was from Anohola side. And so he would bring his sampan in. So the river at that time was very, I don't know why, it was so deep through there. And if you look at where the black pot beaches, there was no beach in those days. That whole sandbar, that whole, everything that developed there is of late, you know, like maybe 15, 20 years ago or whatever, or maybe more. But it was one of these things that when I was a small kid time, you know, we used to go down there, Huku'opu, and they were in the stream. And then we could, you know, the water was actually so deep there, it was kind of clearish, bluish, black color.
Mm-hmm.
And just up the river a little bit, you could get Samoan crab all up the yin-yang.
So then you must remember before the Awais were put there in the buffalo pasture, and then the National Fish and Wildlife Service raised part of the lo'i up there just on the...
That's what changed it.
That's what, I mean, like, it seemed like that's... I remember when that happened, and, you know, there was a handful of changes, and, you know, we had flooding, and there was some clearing of how up high and things like that, and there was stuff that took the oxbow out of the river. There's a lot of different things. Every time we make a change to the wetland, it impacts the flexibility of that river.
Well, so you remember that, too.
Well, yeah. I mean, because I used to live down there, and this sounds really selfish, but we had a shop right there near the Dolphin. Yep. And so basically, we used to get out of our canoes right there. There was probably 15 or more feet, almost like a little beach area near where the Dolphin was, where we would swap out on the canoes. And all of that got eaten away. And when they made a few changes further up the river, every time he did it, we would see where there would be an impact along the embankment of the river. Anytime there was a change, anytime there was an alley or a ditch or something, infill, it would impact it.
Well, I beg this question now. Why all of a sudden did we lose so much of the beachfront there at Black Pot? Why all of a sudden?
Well, I mean, what I believe Terry Lilly was just saying is that over time with these large tides that have coming, we've been having these king tides, and then when we are hardening both sides of the river where the river is not allowed to sit there and snake more naturally,
I didn't understand that part of it, because it just seemed like we've had high tides before.
Yeah.
We've had tidal waves. I remember 57. We've had so many kind of weird situations. But then in the first place, we had that beautiful sandbar, and we all loved that sandbar. It was a family outing there. You could have 100 cars out there. Everybody would make their, party with the family. The kids can splash in the water.
Yeah.
So that was a perfect place for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I remember there used to be a bunch of ironwood trees right there just to the mountainside of the pier. And I remember watching them all get washed down by high tides. And about 3 deep worth that over about 4 or 5 years they got washed out. So, there's a natural ebb and flow of what happens. How do you feel about having the parking lot on the beach taken away?
So I'm sorry, how about I feel about what?
The fencing on the beach there going up to take away the parking. Like, I've gone to these meetings at Hanalei School that are overflow meetings, and there has been a resounding resistance from, I would say, almost maybe one or two people who are brave enough to say they support the idea of closing the beach down, and
I am 100% behind everybody that supports to continue as much as we can. And of course, the one spot there, Captain Sutton, what's his name? I'm trying to think of his name. He's the one on the front page of the Garden Island. He kind of stood there as they were going to put a chain across.
Dustin Barkin, Robert Paw, I think I saw
That's what it is. He was there.
Yeah.
And he said, no, you won't. You won't put that chain across there because I have to be able to bring my Zodiac down.
Okay, that was Robert Paw. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then so they backed off, and then instead of putting the chain up there so nobody could get on the beach, then they forget the chain, they put the rocks in further down. So at least we have part of it there.
Yeah, so it's an issue. Well, I appreciate your long-term view on the bay and what has happened there. I mean, there's certainly more buildings, is that correct? I mean, I know that before there was a hotel, there's been a Simon bar, there's been gas stations, there's been a number of things in Hanalei that are no longer there. When you reflect back 75 years ago, was it substantially less crowded, or was it?
It's funny about that because every summer we were in sugar business in Waimea. Every summer we came over to our beach house and we're there from June till September, school. And then so you really got to know all the Hawaiians, and the real Hukilaus went out with the boats, and they had these turnstiles on the beach, and everybody come down and, Hukilau and wear your T-shirt, put fish inside your T-shirt and go home. So that whole area was always good, and it very slowly crept up on us, the growth. I mean, sure, there are more houses, but luckily, the bridge keeps the hotel away, and as long as we don't have the problem of septic tanks or sewers, that's still an issue. I think that's something maybe there has to be some new technology on how to handle sewage, like a sewage plant or something.
Right, right. There are two in the commercial buildings down there, but there isn't for the rest of the community. Well, thank you so much for listening and for calling in.
Well, you know, I love your program, and you guys are just so on it. Everything is something we should all listen to. So thanks so much, Felicia and Marshall. You guys have a good day. I'll be listening.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. And we appreciate your mana'o, and we appreciate any listeners who do call in and offer other perspectives or corrections. This is a community conversation. Thank you so much. Aloha. Thank you for calling KKCR. You're on the air.
Oh, aloha, Felicia.
Hey.
Bridget Hammerquist calling in to say hello. And it's
great.
Nice to hear Alan.
Can you turn your radio off?
Yes, I will.
Hey.
Thank you.
You know what? I am so stoked that you called in because I actually have a question for you, too.
Okay.
Okay. Are you following about what's going on at the county council tomorrow?
Yes, a little bit.
Just
recently spoke with Ann Walton, who's done a lot of work. Ann Walton, yeah, with the planning department and with members of the county council. And, I mean, she's really to be credited for just a couple of years' worth of really hard work. And we talked a little bit, and I had an idea, and she liked it. I'll probably be mentioning it tomorrow at the meeting.
Okay, what's the idea?
Well, the idea is this. The commission, as you know, was in session for a good 6 months.
That's the planning commission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the commission, yeah, for the plan. And to assist, they reviewed basically what the planning department put forward, and there was like 9 drafts. The commissioners changed, as you know, as you've acquainted me. And not anyone on the commission really probably heard all of the testimony.
No, I'm sure no one did. Not possible. Not possible.
And I know in my line of work, if a jury sits on something, it's really important to the court that all the jurors sit, even the alternates, so that you don't get into a situation where someone is deciding an issue and they haven't heard the evidence, they don't know the facts. And I think it was kind of a hard thing. And when you look at the plan that ultimately was released and brought to the county council, it's a fairly vague plan, not much structure, and it's supposed to be a guide for Kauai for the 20 years going forward. But it's sufficiently unspecific that it can't guide you on anything much at all. And there's areas that they did surveys, the planning department ran surveys, and I know I've shared with you, for instance, in the South Shore, people returned postcards and indicated areas of greatest concern. And wouldn't you know, Mahalepu Valley got the most votes of any area on the South Shore as being high on people's concern list. Is there anything in the general plan that addresses Mahalepu Valley going forward over the next 20 years?
No.
Nope.
Yep.
Just didn't make it in. And if it's the area of greatest concern and the planning department and the planning commission don't even have it in the plan with any specific reference to its resources, its environmental rich heritage, culturally species that are protected, that are unique to that valley, nowhere else in the world. It's actually got plant and animal species that are unique to Mahalapu. It's got a rich cultural history. It's got a rich historic history with the Battle of Kamehameha's warriors in his effort to take Kauai. I mean, that whole thing, I mean, there's nothing that gives you any guidelines going forward. And then I saw the lawsuit filed by Adam Asquith, which I was really happy to see.
Okay, I'm glad that you looked at that. Okay.
Yeah. And I think he's right on in that the sense and gist of the lawsuit is that the general plan does not take into consideration the impact to the natural water resources of the island, and in particular the Wailua River and the tributary that the county's just pulled off to provide more water to Lihue, without much of an environmental review at all to determine the impact that it's going to have. They basically just filed a FONSI. And
finding of no significant impact.
Right, which is
called a Fonzie. Yep.
It's really not true at all. And so I think his lawsuit is challenging the county council because, in general, you know, when it comes to resources, he's right. I mean, Hawaii, our own lawyer in our case at Mahalapu, in our Clean Water Act case, told us that of all the states he's worked in, he said the state of Hawaii has one of the strongest public trust doctrines of any of the 50 states. And he said the wording of it is really fabulous. And our Hawaii Supreme Court keeps relying on it. And just recently, last week, I believe, came down with a decision in favor of Earth Justice for the reef fish that were being harvested and collected for people's fish tanks without any regard to
right.
what it's doing to the reefs or the overall ecology of the ocean. And the Hawaii Supreme Court said, you can't do that. You are supposed, because that's another resource, you are supposed to know the impact to that environmental resource before you go and impact it.
So for the listener, I am putting right on my Facebook page here, Felicia Alonji Cowden, I'm putting the Hawaii Public Trust Doctrine link so that people can see what that lawsuit's basically about. When people, because not everybody knows what the Public Trust Doctrine is. So can you very succinctly say simply what the public trust doctrine is about?
Okay, now you know you're asking for a lawyer to say something simply.
I know that I appreciate your competence as a lawyer, and I appreciate
Section Article 11
of the Hawaii State Constitution.
Yeah, of the Hawaii Constitution, and if you go to Section 2 under that, that gets into the management of our natural resources, and it basically says that every government agency, down to the lowest member of whether it's the county clerk, they have a duty in doing their job to make sure that whatever they're doing does not impact the natural resources of the state for the people of Hawaii now and in the future. In other words, they all have an affirmative duty under the Constitution to preserve things like our water, our clean land, our clean air.
And would that include not allowing too much nutrients or poo in the water, basically there at Mahalapu? I mean, can you use the
surely
press?
It would.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, we brought our action in federal court, so we're relying on the Clean Water Act. But if we have to sue in the state environmental court, if someday down the road, if the dairy decides to still push and should through some means get an approval from the state, then we will be suing them in the state environmental court, and we will be, our case will be based in large part on the public trust doctrine, because you can't put that load of manure in that valley without putting the aquifer at risk, our drinking water at risk, the stream at risk, and the ocean and the reefs at risk.
So I'm going to speak for a moment to the listener who might be considering going to the county council meeting tomorrow. It starts at 8:30 in Lihue. This topic, where it goes on what's called executive session, that means because it's a lawsuit, they're not going to have it be public. They're not going to talk about the lawsuit in front of people in the galley or on television. So if people want to speak on this, this is my experience from attending so many council meetings, that the clerk will list all three. There's three topics that are going before executive session. And so when that's announced, they will say what they each are, and usually they'll rip through it really fast. So it's important if people want to speak on it, that they sign up for it before it just gets passed by. And then if they're going to make a public statement, this is my opinion, is that it's really important to not attack the council. The council did not do the general plan. The council is not responsible there. So it is good if you are going to make a testimony. And because I know many people are very passionate about the water diversion in Wailua, and I have dealt with that pretty much the whole time I've been on KKCR as being a hot-button issue, because whenever you take water from one area into another area that it doesn't naturally flow, you're taking capacity and opportunity from the area that is affected by the diversion. So I think that if people are going to speak on this, that it's important to say, we're glad that this is raised as an important issue and that you are looking at it without attacking these council people because they did not create the problem. They just simply need to look at it. But for people to show up or to send something in to council testimonies at kauai.gov that say, we affirm that the quality of our water and the direction of our water is an essential part of the plan. Does that sound consistent with your experience, Bridget?
Yes, and in fact, your advice is right on. I mean, the council now has an opportunity. They basically have three courses of action when the plan was taken to them by the planning department, having been passed on by the planning commission, and that was to adopt it as presented, which they didn't do, send it back for a fix, and or they have the authority under their charter to actually make the amendments to the plan that they deem appropriate. So you want to work with the council and you want to make positive suggestions. And at this point, you're right, there's no point in directing any anger at the council, but it's a good idea for the council to have the public input to understand that there are citizens other than Mr. Asquith, who's very knowledgeable on water, that are, you know, truly dismayed that our general plan didn't do much in addressing preservation of our water resources. And this is an issue that's known to the Commission on Water Resources. I mean, Earth Justice just had a big action that was actually concluded with a stipulated settlement, and you're aware of that, Felicia. I know
in Waimea.
Waimea. And some of your listeners may not be, but at one point, the flow in the Kokay diversion, the in-stream flow in the Kokay diversion, was greater than the in-stream flow in the Waimea River. And you know, somebody said, "Well, maybe we should switch their names, you know, and call it the Kokay River and the Waimea diversion." But, you know, that was just mm-hmm. to bring a point.
And well, I mean, at one point it was 95% diverted, and it's been 110 years.
Yep. And it's now slowly getting restored in part. The Hule'ia in our part of the world here in the South mm-hmm. Shore is 100% diverted by a 1957 sugar diversion, and it directs all of the Hule'ia stream flow, which is a lot, into the Waitā Reservoir that happens to be located on Grove Farm property. It's not Grove Farm water, although, you know, they might suggest that, but it's really not. It's waters of the state. And the Waitā has consequently become the largest reservoir in the state because now there hasn't been sugar in Kalua since 1996. And all those many irrigation ditches that the diversion used to be directed into are no longer in use, so they all got closed. And the water flows all directly down into the Waitā. And, of course, as you know, Grove Farm is proposing and has put a term of the lease with the Ulupono Initiative and Piero Midiar to give them up to 3 million gallons daily.
Right. I've seen that. So that is that's a very big issue. So one thing.
It is a big issue. I mean, it's as much water as the entire Keahuna Condominium Association uses. In a month.
Which is the big area in Poipu, and that would, So
and that's, they're proposing to distribute that to the Hawaii Dairy Farms operation if it were ever to get approved on a daily basis. And so that is not preservation of the water. That's not even mentioned in the plan. I mean, the whole idea of a proposed industrial dairy for Mahalapu didn't even make it into the 20-year plan, even though the planning department had actually issued building permits. Those permits have since been revoked by a judge Valenciano, who is a presiding judge for the state environmental court. And so, you know, they don't exist anymore, but they were there, and yet none of that made it into the general plan. So it really would be good for people to make their voices heard, share with the county council that you feel the plan should reflect an effort to preserve our natural resources. Going forward over the next 20 years, that the concepts of not building beyond the capacity of the infrastructure are real, and that growth plans are in place in other communities all over the United States. They're not foreign ideas. This is well developed in planning.
And when we look at a topic like that, I think that it is important when people are coming in. Like something, one thing I want to say in applauding the person who did this lawsuit is, it is being leveraged right now before this decision is actually made. So the general plan update is really confirmed. So my sense is they will make that correction, and there will never be really an implemented lawsuit. Is that correct in terms of...
Well, there's true that potential, because he's brought to their attention real vividly, like, you need to look at this. This is not being addressed, and this is not okay, and it's a violation of state law and the state constitution. That's what he says in his plan, in his lawsuit.
So when
and
it's
so
just...
So they can fix that. So they can basically make his lawsuit moot. That's the legal term that's used.
Moot. Okay, so when it is a draft general plan update, the lawsuit couldn't actually get implemented until it is truly a general plan update, right? It would have to not be the draft, or does it go to court even now?
Well, he's filed a lawsuit now. I mean, it could be, his lawsuit could be challenged as being premature, because the plan is not in final form, and it may be that the council, through its county attorney, will do that. I don't know. Or they may take the lawsuit for what it is, as a cry for help and recognition of something that is very precious and must be protected going forward if we're to this island nation is to exist. I mean,
well, in the 2491, the pesticide issue was something that went kind of constantly there, is the biotech industry said, hey, if you do this, we will sue. And they did. And one of the reasons for the two councilmen who did not want to approve 2491 is they said, hey, this is just going to end up in a lawsuit. Another council person said, well, maybe that needs to happen so we can be looking at this. So if people go, and there's a lot of people there, it can't even be that they can just sign in and just say, just make a little statement right on the sign-in piece, too. Like, because I know sometimes people don't want to go and sit for a very long time. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a handful of people who do testify, and then they can say, we are testifying on behalf of these 20 people, that can be something that can speed it along. I'm not saying every testimony isn't important, though, so I don't want to be making that suggestion. Have you looked at the council, because you're on the air right now, so when I'm looking at the council agenda for tomorrow, there's two other things that really catch my attention, so I'm just going to tell you, and I'm going to just tell the listener, is that there is a bond for $25,750,000 that's on here, which means they're going to take a loan, right? As you get a bond, it's basically getting a loan for $25 million. That seems like a lot. And, you know, I'm looking at, you know, what's on this bill, you know, and, you know, includes black pot improvements. I would say, you know, the biggest thing is Aliumanu Road. There's a lot of pieces that they need to be fixing. They want to pay for the Adolescent Treatment and Healing Center. There's the Kauai West Development Plan. A lot of different pieces in here. But a lot of times when we just borrow money like that, nobody's even paying attention, and that's quite a bit to borrow. And so it's upping our debt.
Right.
And then I also know that people might care about this. There's a number of issues on there, but another piece that people might care about that I see is coming up tomorrow is the bicycle pedestrian path to go longer where, you know, some people feel pretty humbug about it. They're not happy about that extension of it. And some pieces with the Aluloa. So I'm hearing about that a lot. I'm not making a statement one direction or another, but for people who are concerned about that Waipoli connector of the Alahele multi-use path, because of the cultural impacts in the areas, basically there's, you know, more burial sites right there. That is in front of the council tomorrow, and it looks like that'll probably be in mid-morning for this piece with the lawsuit, I think that that will be probably about 1:30 or 2 o'clock. It'll definitely be after lunch. People don't have to be in there for the whole time for that. But those are, there's a few issues that are important right there for on that topic.
Yeah, I think participation in general, if people have the time, is a good idea, because the council does respond. You could see at the last meeting that we discussed the general plan, you could see that there were council members that were actually moved by some of the testimony that was offered, and there were questions asked, and, you know, it's good for people to be involved, if at all possible, because they don't want to do this in a vacuum either. I think the council members, I know when we've met with them, have expressed appreciation for our coming in.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it a whole lot easier for them, and there are so many citizens that actually have a lot of capacity. I have to say you're one of them, and you've had a lifetime here in Hawaii, and a little bit of time somewhere else, but born and raised here, and really understand how policy impacts planning and what happens with real estate and everything else. And so I know we've got a number of citizens that are really willing and able to help the county with maybe what they're doing.
Right, and that's a little bit about what is going to be discussed tomorrow. There are citizens here that are experienced planners, seasoned planners that have worked elsewhere and that do know, you know, Felicia, you remember hearing, who was it, Mel was saying, well, you know, they're not going to let me control the number of planes that land here. But if you're a planner, you know little tricks of the trade, and that is, well, maybe you can't get into the federal control of flights, but if you only have so many gates at your airport, which is totally under your control, that controls the number of flights that can come in every day. So you don't have to be inundated with more tourists than you can safely accommodate.
Well, that's a good point, and I know this week I've heard even more impassioned discussion about, for the people who are in the impact zone, that those flights just never stop coming, you know. So the sound impacts, the noise abatement issue, that's not really in there either. It's not really in the plan. And so that's of high impact for the people who live in that Lihue, Hanamau'u area.
Yeah, and our roads are congested, and you know, there's a thing of, well, you can't control the number of rental cars. Well, there's tricks to that, too. And that's why, you know, season planners could really help. And the good people that have worked with Ann Walton and have worked with helping the planning department. And they actually recently just made a suggestion to Marie and Marissa in the planning department, and they liked the suggestion. So the EPA recognizes the importance of citizen science and, you know, has come out with strong statements after Flint, Michigan, that governments need to listen to citizen science. They need to take their communities seriously and accept the offers of help, because a lot of times the people that live there have really good ideas. And so I think probably you'll see a little bit of that tomorrow.
Okay.
But, yeah, really encourage people to get involved, because we're only going to keep it this beautiful island if we all help.
If we all help. So I appreciate that. And I do want to give a shout out to the County Council for October 4th, which is a couple few Wednesdays out, 2 weeks from tomorrow. I believe at 8:30 they have gotten the War Memorial Convention Hall, so there is more room. Last time there was about 30 people who were waiting outside the room, some of whom left and never really came in to testify. So it is a good opportunity to come in, and I think if people are working in little hui's, I know there's people who are concerned about the criminal justice system, incarceration, and you know, that whole element of poverty, drugs, and politics putting people in to prison, maybe at a disproportionate amount. A lot of times drug issues and depression, those are really things that are more of a health issue than it is needing to put people in prison. that, I know that issue is an unaddressed issue. And so if people, because I've been get people telling me this regularly, and I would say, if you're shy for coming in, come in as a group. Maybe I'll sign a piece of paper saying that you have a similar perspective. It makes the meeting flow along much more quickly. Maybe two or three different people are able to testify on it. And then, you know, you can all stand up or something like that. The person could say, who else is here for this reason, and is largely in agreement.
And the other idea that you had, which is really true, is they do give a piece of paper, right? It's like a half of an 8.5 by 11 mm-hmm. sheet of paper. And you can write out what your concerns are and what you would like to contribute to the
yeah.
thought process. And that those are all gathered up and collected for the council.
And then it goes on record, and it goes
right,
on
and
television.
It becomes part of the permanent council record. And there's staff that address it, and they are responsible to take it to the committee of the county council and put it before the county council members that are on that committee. That subject is up.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a process, and it's all good. And if we all help, it gets better, right?
That's right. So it sounds like I'm going to see you there tomorrow. I've got a handful of other things to ask you. So I'll see you there.
Okay, and I'll sign off for now. Thanks, Felicia. Enjoy your show.
Okay.
For the public service that you're giving all of us.
Thank you. We're happy. That's what Kauai Community Radio is about. So, Marshall, I know there's been a handful of calls. Can you give us an update?
Sure. A listener let us know that the Honolulu Biennial Foundation is sharing some works with us starting this Thursday. There will be screenings of short documentaries from the Honolulu Biennial Art Exhibit. That's going to be at Gallery 103 in Kukui'ulu Center.
In Poipu?
In Poipu, 5 to 7 p.m. this Thursday, September 21st.
Okay, and so I saw something on that?
Yeah.
So those films, I think they're going to be touching on a lot of different challenges in different parts, different islands, and I think I saw something like the Palestinians. There's like a Palestinian perspective, an Iraqi perspective. So this would be very valuable for people that have a world awareness or want to have a world awareness mm-hmm. and to see perspectives from the people themselves rather than our mainstream media that has an intentional bias.
That's right. It looks like we have filmmakers from Palestine, Iraq, Guam, Marshall Islands, Tonga, New Zealand. Some of them are apparently from two places, but yeah, that's quite a spectrum.
Quite a spectrum, so that should be pretty interesting. And a couple weeks out, it looks like Sally French and Doug Britt are going to be there at the same place.
Nice.
So that'll be good. Now, there was a couple other callers that came in between, and I know you were going to say a little bit of a perspective on that. Do you remember what they were? It was kind of when we were talking about Black Pot Park.
Okay, I'm going to have to think about that for a second. I'm sorry.
Okay, that's all right.
I didn't make a note. Yeah, and callers want me to pass something on, and then something happens.
Right.
Somebody asked once to know if anybody else noticed that Waipoo Falls are dry. I don't know if that's a regular seasonal thing that happens, or according to rainfall. But
well, the Waipoo Falls, which is up there in Koke'e, kind of dumping down into Waimea Canyon, I have heard a handful of different perspectives on that, but my best understanding is that is very much in the Koke'e ditch system.
Mm-hmm.
So at least when I went with the Commission on Water Resource Management, when those falls are flowing hard, that's because they're dumping out of the ditch, because they have removed the water from Waimea River. But there is, I'm forgetting the name of it now, that maybe, Jake, do you know the name of there's a reservoir up there where people tend to fish. They get trout and stuff like that that's up there.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the name of it, but I know what you're referring
to. Yeah, there's like a reservoir up there that can't hold the capacity that it once did. So I was even thinking about that when Bridget was talking about the Waita Reservoir. You know, we are seeing these earthen dams are no longer without the sugar industry. They're being maintained as much. In Ke Kaha, we have the Ke Kaha Ag Association, who does take care of those ditches, but that particular thing is only half full now because of the water threatening to maybe break that dam. So sometimes they have to dump the water out. So when that Waipo'o Falls is really flowing hard, I think that that's like a gate's been opened to help do that. And I live on the North Shore. I don't live on that side. If we have a knock on my listener who wants to share, set me straight, please do. You're listening to Hanalei, KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall. And this program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man and Edible Hawaiian Islands.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
And mahalo for listening to Kauai Community Radio. I had a few texts in here. One of them says, the reservoir up there can't hold. Please check. Can you announce? Please announce when those movies. Oh, okay. The reservoir up there can't hold the water. And then they also ask, can you please announce when those movies are going to happen? That's going to be at Gallery 103 in Poipu, which is in the Kukiola Shopping Plaza, the newer shopping mall over there in Poipu. What time does it start?
Five. It's 5 to 7 this Thursday, September 21st.
Okay, and then also Dan Ahuna, who is our DHHL person, he is going to be speaking today. He'll be at Kanui Kapono listening to the people. Kanui Kapono is in Anahola on the ocean side of the highway on the south side of Anahola, and he'll be there from 6 to 7:30 p.m., and so he's our DHHL person. Did you have a question, Jake? No, I thought I heard you saying something. Okay.
So you like to break down the acronyms and such there, Felicia, DHHL?
Department of Hawaiian Homelands. Thank you.
Sure.
Because a lot of times when people use these letter acronyms is that nobody even understands what's being spoken about. So we are expecting our guest still to come in from the Humane Society that has been down there right now. This week they are doing free spay and neuter, so that is a good thing for what people have going on. And also another big issue is on Mauna Kea about the 30-meter telescope. A very important issue that's happening is tomorrow before the Board of Land and Natural Resources is that it is coming up again. You know, it is going to go for permitting there. And I watch pretty faithfully so much of the contested case hearings, and it went on for 4 months, and a lot of incredible work went in from pro se citizens, basically people representing themselves as an intervener status. And what happened, like I read the court judgment, and the judge basically threw out just an incredible amount of really relevant information. And so it was kind of nearly impossible to imagine that they could just say, okay, well, all this information on the cultural historical pieces and, you know, continuing cultural relevance of that area just wasn't relevant. And so she made the recommendation that that the Board of Land and Natural Resources go with the permit. And so it'll be interesting to see. We were talking with Bridget about the public trust, and the public trust also affects that mountain up there. And it was a public trust issue of why the Supreme Court threw it really right back and said, nope, they took away the permits. They said it was not permitted. And so it got redone. And so it's going to go before the Board of Land and Natural Resources. I'm going to be watching it on Naleo television tomorrow. You can see it online. My anticipation is that they will just go ahead and permit it again. And then so we're going to see that there's going to be a little bit more conflict, because both sides, no matter which way it goes, the telescope is going to contest it, they're going to appeal it, and then the citizens are going to appeal it. So, Marshall, did you have another call?
Sure did. The talk story, there's been a change of location for the talk story with Dan Ahuna tonight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that is now at the Hui'ia Church, which is in Anahola on the...
mountain side of the road. It's up there. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Do you know where it is?
Yeah, it's kind of right where it used to be, the KS preschool area.
Yeah, it's behind Kamehameha
Preschool.
Yeah.
So you just go up, it's Kealia Road, I believe, so you go up the hill, heading south in Anahola, and you go inland, and it would be right there. We have a call?
We sure do.
Aloha, you're on the air.
Hi, Felicia, how are you today? Hi, Marshall.
Hi.
You know, it started on Sunday on PBS, Public Broadcasting Channel 11, a Ken Burns special. It's called The Vietnam War.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Ken Burns is a world-famous documentary film artist. He's won accolades to the highest degree. And it is just the most interesting lesson in history that you could ever want to have about what led up to the Vietnam War, the French colonization of Vietnam, where it was basically, you know, a slave state for 100 years, right? But the first installment was on Sunday. It was from 8 to 10, and then last night, well, there was the second, and tonight is the third, and possibly the last installment. It's from 8 till 10 o'clock. Right?
Well, I know there's 18 hours in that documentary.
What's that?
It's an 18-hour documentary.
Oh,
I've been looking for it.
Then it's
going to
be continuing on through the week then, because it's almost like required, you know, material for anybody who wants, because the guy Ken Burns, I can't give him enough accolades for how well he puts together archival footage and the way that he produces his stuff.
I have to agree.
It is so good. And anybody who missed it's important to see the first the episodes from 1, 2, 3, 4 and so on to really get the full grasp of how important a documentary it is, because and anybody who has lucky enough to have a computer could go to, you know, pbs.org, the war in Vietnam, and you can watch it from the first episode on.
Okay.
Because it's just incredible that, you know, I thought I knew a lot, and until I saw the first episode, which gave a real in-depth history of the French, you know, really the colonization. It was brutal, of Vietnam, and how it proceeded into the blunder of, you know, U.S. involvement in Vietnam. I can't emphasize enough how important. And everybody says this. All the people in the press and everybody, all the people that know about the war in Vietnam have given this the highest marks, and everybody, nobody should miss it. And,
so,
and it's going to be it's going to always be available on the internet. If you don't see it this week or for the or however long it goes, you know, it's just too good, even though it's hard.
They had to edit it
in a way where it didn't give GIs too much post-traumatic stress syndrome. You know what I mean?
Yes, and thank you for bringing it up.
Well, listen, I really wanted to mention it, and thanks for giving me the airtime because, you know, anybody, if I had a 12-year-old kid, you know, I'd sit my kid down after dinner and go, and we're going to watch the public broadcasting. We're going to have a lesson in history tonight. You know, and we're going to watch all 18 hours of it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Talisa. Have a nice day.
You're welcome. So when he's talking about what Ken Burns puts out and suggesting it as material for educating kids, I am so much in agreement with that. And in fact, when I was teaching middle school, we watch, like, one's called Slavery, the Making of America, and it's American history through the eyes of the experience of the African-American people. Mm-hmm. And it is so powerful. And another series that Ken Burns did that also, really, I like to use all of them for education because they do detail and they're entertaining. Mm-hmm. One is called How the West Was Won and Lost, and that tells American history and manifest destiny through the eyes of the indigenous Native American people.
Mm-hmm.
Another really powerful piece of history. Then there's one called Jazz. I'm trying to think what the length of that name of Jazz, but it talks about American history through the eyes of jazz music. And how our whole American society is somewhat like jazz music. And Marsalis. I'm forgetting right now. I have it written down there. But very, very good programming. And I've been looking forward to this Vietnam series coming out because I'm sure he will do a very good job of addressing that issue. And we are on the 50th anniversary of that war. And again, putting that shout out to people who want to help support our Vietnam veterans, because many of them are still in post-traumatic stress over that. And it is more powerful when you come home to a community that is hard on you versus when you come home and it's a shared experience and it's not a shame-based experience, so that people still are holding these scars. So there's going to be on November 11th, the Veterans Center is doing a big party, sort of loving gathering to be honoring our Vietnam-era veterans, so people could call the Vet Center if they either want to help fund the dinner and the experience for a vet, or if, you know, it's open to everybody to come. So that's happening. So we thank Dan for calling that in. Our guest, Emma Clifford, is in here. I'm happy to see you, Emma.
Thank you so much, Felicia, for inviting us.
Yes, so I'm going to have you move up against the mic so your voice comes in nice and clear. So I realized I do not know the name of your organization that works with the animals.
Our organization is called Animal Balance.
Animal Balance?
That's correct, yes. And we have a website, animalbalance.org.
Animalbalance.org, and I hear your English accent there.
That's correct.
Is it an American organization or an English one?
It's an American organization, and we have the 501(c)(3) status.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and out of California. But we work globally. We work on islands around the world to help the communities and the authorities to humanely reduce the cat and dog populations.
So humanely reduce those populations, does that mean spay and neuter? What does that mean?
That does. Essentially, the main focus is spaying and neutering, but that is in combination with community outreach, lots of education, lots of fun events that encourage people to interact with the animals, therefore increasing the human-animal bond, the level of compassion and respect for all.
So it's a life-affirming effort.
Correct.
We just had our Department of Land and Natural Resources made it legal for the state to kill on site loose animals. So this is the opposite of that. So
it's
not reducing animal population by coming and shooting them. It's by encouraging homes and by encouraging sterility in these animals so that we don't have as many being born.
That's right. It's honoring the community. It's providing the tools and the information to the community so that people can make decisions about their animals that they need to make. Rather than being penalized for doing the wrong thing, it's providing tools and information and helping people to do the right thing, which is taking responsibility for the care of the animals in the community, whether they live in the home or whether they're free roaming. And so Animal Balance works in 10 different countries around the world to help do this. And for the last couple of years, we've been working on the Hawaiian Islands. And we're just so honored and privileged at this point to be able to come here to Kauai, the most beautiful of all islands.
Well, thank you so much. So it's free.
It is. The services that we provide are absolutely free. We're spaying and neutering the animals. We're also providing parasite treatment, which is extremely important. And we're also offering, actually, this time on this particular campaign through the Kauai Humane Society, free licensure for the dogs as well, and microchips. So all of these things combined really help the community to better take care of the animals, therefore protecting them and protecting all the other beautiful species that live here too.
And so do people have to economically qualify, or is this like no questions asked? You could just come in and they'll help you basically get your animal up to code, right?
That's right, yes. No questions asked whatsoever. We're here to help, and we're to help provide the resources so people can choose to get their animals spayed and neutered. So we recognize that there's no low-cost, affordable services for the people here on Kauai at this time, and they're not accessible either. So the beauty of what we do is we're able to work together with organizations like the Kauai Humane Society and other nonprofit groups in the community that work for animal welfare and provide these services so that they're affordable and they're accessible. In some instances, we can set up our animal hospitals pretty much anywhere in any community where there's a need.
Is that right?
Yeah, we do. So we've used all sorts of buildings and areas to set up these animal hospitals around the world, from discos to bars to churches to community centers. Wherever there's a need, we go to the need. So that reduces the inaccessibility factor.
So if somebody has a whole posse of animals, a lot of times then, like if somebody's got 10, 20 animals, it can become overwhelming, the thought of spending a couple few hundred dollars per animal to get them fixed or spayed and neutered and chipped and all of that. So are you saying that you'd drive out to that location even on Kauai, or?
Well, that's what we're planning to do in the future. At the moment, what we're doing is we're looking to see where the animals are living. Where are the highest numbers of animals that are most at risk? And where do the communities on this island need our help the most? And so we perform targeted spay-neuter clinics. Therefore, we listen to all of the activities that have been taking place up to that point. We listen to the community, first of all. And then we see what resources are available here on island, see what we need to bring in, and then we create these animal hospitals in the communities themselves and invite the community in to bring their animals. Now, if they can't come to the clinic, then that's instance, we may be able to provide transport so people can come to the clinic. It just depends on the situation at the time and the island that we're in and the culture that we're working in.
Wow. Do we have a call ask a question?
Yes, Emma, we have a question from a caller. He wanted to know, here female dogs are apparently spayed by a full hysterectomy. And he wanted to know what type of procedure you use. Is it that, or is it, as he says, a less invasive tube tying or ovary removing?
Yes, so we remove the ovaries of the female dogs. And just to let you know, there is a speciality within the veterinary medicine for spaying and neutering animals. So the veterinarians that we recruit to come on these clinics with us around the world, their incisions are tiny. They're really, really small, and that really does help with the dog's recovery.
Oh.
And the medicines that we use are particularly for this kind of work.
Tell me a little bit more about that, because honestly, I've had two animals die after they got spayed.
Oh,
and
I'm so sorry.
And then I've had a dog where the guts kind of came down. You could tell that it had broken through the abdominal wall, and then so we had to reopen her up and kind of push everything back in and sew it back together. So I go through fear honestly.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's awful, and I'm so sorry to hear that that's happened. No, we're very, very, very careful about who we recruit to come on our campaigns, and so the surgeons that we're bringing with us, they're the best in the world. They really are at doing the spaying and neutering, and they are able to do high volume, meaning that we can do lots of animals each day for surgeries, because they do this every single day of the week.
So are they coming as volunteers?
Yes, they are.
So it's like coming on holiday, and they come here for a week or
two? That's right. That's exactly right. So this is a beautiful way for people who have an extraordinary and very useful skill set to travel and to help other communities around the world. And at the same time, get to know the community, not as a tourist, but through their animals. And that's a completely different experience. It allows us to be in people's homes, talking with people about all sorts of different issues, actually. But it's a very different approach. Our approach is very gentle, and we're very a grassroots group. So, you know, if there's something that's happening in a community that we're working in, we go to that event. We build trust in that community. We are outsiders, but we do the most we can to be able to build that trust and camaraderie with the local community that we're working in.
And then who funds this?
Oh, so there are some wonderful organizations out there. For this particular project that we're here this time on Kauai, the Alley Cat Allies, which is the largest group that for advocacy for community cats, is funding this project, along with Kauai Humane Society. So we've come together. Petco Foundation have also stepped in, because one of the issues here on Kauai and across the Hawaiian Islands is that there aren't too many high-volume spay and neuter veterinarians that can do this kind of work. So we recognized that first, and we said, okay, we need to provide that resource. So we went to the Petco Foundation, and we said, we need to be able to provide this resource. In order to do that on Kauai, we have to have our high-volume spay and neuter vets licensed with a Hawaii veterinary license and what's called the NED license, which allows them to handle controlled substances. So Petco put up the grant so that we could be able to get our veterinarian's license, and that enables us to provide these clinics for different communities on the island.
And how often would you all be coming?
Well, we are really looking to be able to come back multiple times a year. We're hoping 4 or 5 times a year, because there are high numbers of animals here that need to be sterilized. For example, we've been here 2 days, and the first day at our clinic, we sterilized 117 cats and dogs. That is a very high number of animals. And today, we had 105. And so we believe that we'll be doing well over 100 animals each day. And that shows you the need on this island for spaying and neutering. And I have to say, I was doing check-in the last couple of days, and people were just so delighted to have this service and thanking us and saying, please come back, please come back. And so we actually went to meet with the county council members to ask if we could possibly set up a program, because there is this need here to come back multiple times and really help with the overpopulation of cats and dogs here.
So how many of the animals were pets, how many were strays, and how many of them were residents at the Humane Society?
Okay, so this time we wanted to open the program up to everybody. Sometimes we specialize on cats and sometimes dogs and sometimes community cats. But this time, because it's our first campaign here on beautiful Kauai, we wanted to meet everyone, and so we opened it up to everyone. So I would say about 75% have been owned animals, and about 25% have been community cats. And of those owned animals, I would say 40% were dogs and the rest were cats.
So community cats means cats that maybe don't have a family?
Yeah, those that live outside.
Okay. All right. Well, that's actually huge.
It is. It said it had a tremendous response.
Who brought the community cats in? The cat people?
Kauai,
yes, cat people?
Absolutely. We've been advertising on Facebook, as is Kauai Humane Society and KCCP. They also have been advertising. So we've been, you know, and also using the famous coconut wire here on island to get the word.
I know. You know, I only got it. Thank you, Basil Scott, for giving me a call a couple of days ago. I was sort of surprised, because we've been doing a lot of coverage on this. So Scott Pisani from the Humane Society He's obviously very supportive of this.
Tremendous. I think this is a new era for animal welfare here on Kauai. We know that there's been a difficult history here.
Yes, we've had actually an extraordinarily difficult history.
Right, and we recognize that, and we respect that, you know, that there's been some hurt happening here. Absolutely. So we're seeing this week as a complete change. This is a new era for animal welfare here, and the only reason we can do this is because Scott Pisani is 100% behind change. He's progressive and inspirational, and he is looking for these kinds of our kinds of organizations to come here and to help and to sterilize animals and therefore not euthanize as many.
And Marshall?
Where do you do this work? You mentioned going into people's homes. Are you actually making house calls, or do you have a facility that you're working out of right now?
Right now we're working out of the Kauai Humane Society.
Okay.
And in other places we find a building that's not being used. Actually, when we had the meeting with the council folk earlier this week, we were explaining one of the issues that we have is trying to find a good clinic site that we can use, a big classroom or something like that. And it turns out that there's a community center in each district here on Kauai, and the council has said that we can actually use those buildings moving forward.
I would think that would be a good thing, and I would have a couple recommendations. Like Kauai Community Radio, which is where you're at right now, we'll make sure and give you a sticker, is very supportive of this type of community outreach. So if you tell us well ahead of time of when you're coming, and then we can make sure to put a public service announcement that states when and where, and it can get promoted that way. And I think that, you know, we have Pets in Paradise on Saturday mornings. Dr. Ihor Basco, he's the vet that does that show.
Right.
And he would probably be a great person to be a guest on that show, because then people could know well ahead of time. And, you know, I think if you went to community, and, you know, we have a lot of hunting dogs. Some dogs, you know, they really need to keep some breeding pairs, right? If we sterilized everybody, well, then we wouldn't have anybody, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
And there are working animals that are very important, and sometimes an intact working animal is able to be more effective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least that's the opinion of a number of the hunters.
Actually, it's interesting on that point. We were working over on the Molokai, island of Molokai, with the Humane Society there. And the technicians actually that work at the Molokai Humane Society, a number of them also hunt. And their dogs are sterilized. And they are actually doing far better hunting as sterilized dogs that they are than their friends who have dogs that, as you put it, are intact, because the dogs are not running after the females and they're not distracted. They're working to do their job that they're out there to do. So actually, it can actually do the reverse. It can actually help.
Okay. Well, there's also an organization called Fishermen, Hunters, and Farmers.
Okay.
Farmers, Fishermen, and Hunters, or something like that. I kind of remember. Can you look that up real quick?
Farmers, Fishermen,
It might be Fishermen, Hunters. Farmers, and Hunters. It's got all three of those names in there. That's another group that might be a good group to contact so that you're able to get out the word.
Great.
Because that's good, and I think that, like, when people know you're coming ahead of time, it might help people to be able to collect, as you call them, community cats.
Is this a Kauai organization?
It's a Hawaii organization.
Okay.
And I'm a member of it, so I should be able to say it right. But Hunters, Fishermen, and Farmers, or something like that. And they call in, and they are a sponsor of KKCR.
Is that the Hunting, Farming, and Fishing Association?
Probably.
Okay. They're all about feeding Hawaii.
Yes.
We need food, we need hunters, we need farmers, and we need fishermen. Oh, this is great. Why did I not know about this? Huntfarmfish.com.
Yeah, they call in. They're active. So that is a group that you might want to really work with as well.
Great. And I think that's the point of working with all different organizations, all different NGOs, charities, to come together to find a solution for the situations that we're facing here on Kauai.
And you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Emma Clifford is in here from animalbalance.org. How long are you here for?
We're here until our clinic runs until Saturday night, and then we have Sunday off, and we're going to do a beach cleanup, and then we all fly home on Monday.
Okay, where's home?
For me, it's Portland, but my team from all over the world. Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Yes. And then is there... They could go to animalbalance.org and then look on yes. Hawaii, and they would be able to see a little bit of information
yes,
on that?
Yes, we have a page on our program on Hawaii, and we also describe our other programs around the world. We started work actually on the Galapagos Islands in Ecuador, where they face very difficult issues between native and non-native species. And some of the lessons that we've learned there will actually, we believe, be able to bring forward here on Kauai. We've also worked in Cuba, American Samoa, Independent Samoa, Bahamas, Saipan, and a number of other different countries. So we have a wealth of experience of working in different places that face are very quite challenging issues between different species and sometimes in the communities themselves. So anything we can lend from our experience to help, that's what we're here to do.
Well, I appreciate it. It's less violent than dropping a whole bunch of poison on an island. We just had that, you know, yeah. dealing with rats, but I mean, rats are still sentient beings. Marshall, did you have a comment?
Yes, we have a listener who would like us to back up just a step and reintroduce Emma and what she does and how to access those services, including can people register for that or just show up?
For the clinic this week.
Yep.
So we actually did such a great job and with the Kauai Humane Society of advertising this clinic that people actually called in, and I think within a couple of days, if 3 or 4 days, all of the appointments were gone, because as I said, then this service is so sorely needed here. So at this time we are fully booked out till the end of the week. We have honored all the people that we had on a wait list. If there is a no-show, meaning the person perhaps couldn't catch the cat or find the dog or whatever, then if there's people coming in, we can obviously give them that spot. But it's very competitive to come into the clinic
right now. You're booked.
We are fully booked throughout the week, yes. We do have a backup list again, and if somebody doesn't come in, we can again call them.
And what number should they call?
Yep.
That would be the number for Kauai Humane Society.
Okay. And
the Humane Society. Okay. So register through them.
Exactly.
So you might be able to look that up and give the number. We're going to hear from a couple of events that are coming up, and we'll be right back. And if people want to call in with a direct question, it's 826-7771. So we're going to look at what's going on with our community emergency response team training and what's coming up at Waipa Foundation.
The Kauai Fire Department is currently providing free training to all island residents that are interested in becoming a Community Emergency Response Team member. The CERT program trains residents to become self-reliant in the event of natural disasters such as tsunamis, hurricanes, and flooding. The next 24-hour CERT training starts on October 4th at St. Catherine's School in Kapa'a. For more information, go to kauai.gov/CERT. Again, kauai.gov/CERT.
On Saturday, September 30th, Kona Brewing Company presents Makana Waipa, Eat the Invasives, a benefit to celebrate the bounty of Waipa and help inspire folks to Malama Aina. Chefs Mark Oyama, Gavin Onishi, Mark Noguchi, Lee Ann Wong, Adam Watton, and Jason Sessions will create tantalizing dishes with locally sourced ingredients, each featuring an invasive species. Music by the Waipa Serenaders and Keale. A beautiful evening of food, drink, and aloha supporting the Waipa Foundation. Tickets and more info at makanawaipa.eventbrite.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. You know, I don't know if you heard that, Emma, but Eat the Invasives, there's all kinds of ways that we have a very fragile island environment with all kinds of endemic and indigenous species. And so as we've had introduced species and animals, it's been really pretty incredible impact on the environment, including like pigs and goats and all kinds of things. And so we have to also hold our job as the apex predator, like with the pigs and the goats. And so that meal there at Waipa, when it's Eat the Invasives, is kind of a fun way of teaching people how to, you know, best take advantage of all the different invasive, species, animals, plants, everything that we've got coming in. And even the pets that we love can be problematic mm-hmm. to the birds and pieces like that. So did you get the Humane Society number?
I did. That's 808-632-0610. 808-632-0610. So you can call the Kauai Humane Society at that number to basically get on a waiting list to have your pet spayed or neutered.
Yep, and yeah. I would also recommend that, because there's such a need here on island, that people call the council members and let them know that they really want this service, because that's only going to help us when we're writing our grant proposals asking for further funding so that we can come back and do this again and again and again. So if we have the funding, we can come back, and we really do want to come back and be able to help the communities here on Kauai.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the Humane Society is going to be moving forward having an on-staff neutering service. Is that correct?
At the moment, it is closed. And one of the things that we have been doing while we have been here is providing hands-on technical training with their medical team.
Okay.
That's what we were doing the week before we came here. Now, the whole goal of what we're doing is to try to increase their capacity to provide these services. So last week we were doing the training, and this week we're working in tandem with the Kauai Humane Society staff, the veterinarians and the technicians, and actually today some of the administrative staff were learning how to do some technical skills with our animals. So everybody's pitching in, and we're trying to show everybody as much as we possibly can while we're here, you know, in a safe environment to do that. So that therefore gives Kauai Humane Society the ability then to open up the clinic again and be able to provide these services.
Okay, because that's good, and there's obviously always the vets that are here, the veterinary clinics that provide this, because what happens is it seems like between birth and sexual maturity, it can be a relatively short window. So if you're here three times a year, that might not line up with how, you know, a kitten or a puppy comes into this life and is ready.
Right. There's always got to be ongoing services on any island that we're working. And then we see Animal Balance coming in and doing very much targeted spaying and neutering in areas where perhaps the community isn't able to do that.
Yeah, I think that's good. And I know there are people who have big posses of animals. We have another caller. Aloha, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Felicia. Is this Felicia?
This is Felicia.
Hi, Felicia. This is Summer Rex. I'm calling
on
behalf of my brother, MJ Barsotti.
Hey, Summer. I'm sorry for what happened. I've been seeing that he was badly injured. And MJ, I notice, I mean, I've known him since he's a little boy, same age as my kid.
Yeah, I know. He's grown up now into a young man. He's 21 now, and we're just really distraught and really sad about what has happened on Saturday night.
So can you tell us what happened?
Yes, I wasn't there, but this is from many eyewitnesses and from my brother, who was, you know, obviously there, and his friends. I'll start from the beginning. On Saturday around 5 p.m., my brother's friend, who I'm not going to name just for, you know, his privacy, just said hi to this, you know, young lady with pink hair at the gas station in Princeville, very friendly, you know, just saying hi, what's up, you know, said his name, and she obviously wasn't interested, so he backed off. The night goes on, they go to Tahiti Nui to have some fun, and this lady is there again, and she's really angry and mad, and she is pointing out my brother's friend in the crowd and saying, oh, that's the guy that was, you know, hitting on me or saying hi to me. And she was telling this to her husband, his name is Michael Beck, who did this to my brother. And I guess he works in the pizza department or pizza part of the Tahiti Nui. And later on in the night, so things, you know, my brother's guys didn't know about this happening, about her pointing him out. Later on, things go, you know, things are fine. They're having fun. They were just about to leave, and my brother is looking for his friend, and he goes out in the back parking lot, and he finds him, and he said, you know, let's go. Let's go home. And it's about right before midnight. And this guy, Michael Beck, is up in his friend's face, and he's a smaller guy, you know, maybe 5'1", 5'2", and he recently has shoulder surgery, and he's in a sling. So my brother's first instinct is, well, what's this guy all up in his face about, you know? He's looks threatening, and he looks like he's about to do something harmful to him. So my brother gets in between his friend and this Michael Beck man, who's, I guess, 6'2", and he's about 200 pounds, so he's much bigger. My brother didn't know that he had a knife hidden, which was a large knife used for cutting fish, like especially ahi, and very sharp. It wasn't a knife that was from Tahiti Nui. It wasn't a knife that he should have been having just in his pocket, hanging around. It's large. It's probably more than 6 inches. My brother gets in his face and tells him to back off from his friend before he hurts him. And then the guy and him fight real quick. They fall on the ground. And then all of a sudden, my brother stands up and his hand is almost hanging off his body. And he's bloody everywhere. And this guy is running away and hid the knife in his car. Tried to run away, but some bystanders that saw this happen, they ran after him and caught him. That's when he got injured because the guys that, you know, my brother's friends and just people from Tahiti Nui saw this happen. They caught the guy, make sure he didn't run away, and then they were already calling 911 because my brother was bleeding out and he was passed out unconscious.
Well, I saw the cuts, and, you know, your brother, the side of him that I know, have always known, he's incredibly kind and helpful.
Yeah.
Very friendly, not confrontational, and when I look at how deep that slaying was on his side, that is a mortal wound. It could be. How's he doing?
Yes, that was, luckily, thank God, that it didn't go past his ribs. Like, his ribs protected his life because it would have punctured his lung or his heart. It's right on top of his heart.
And then it looks like there's a wound in the side, too, below that. I mean, I'm just looking at all the damage.
There's 5 wounds total.
I just am shocked. I mean, you know, like, what I know of your brother and have, you know, seen him for a number of years, I mean, since child, he is not a confrontational type of person unless he's had some profound change in the last month or two that I don't know about. But so was there was no arrest?
No, the man, Michael Beck, was arrested that night and taken to the hospital to make sure he was okay. He was fine. He just had, you know, a black eye or so. The police had to make sure that he was okay. And then he was released from the hospital. So he was arrested, but he wasn't charged with anything, which doesn't make any sense to us. And we're just, like, so bummed out because he's just on the loose. And we just don't know. The police aren't investigating still. So we're talking with an officer or a detective, and he's being helpful with us. But, I mean, the guy is just out. And it's very unsettling. Because,
well,
he obviously seems unstable.
Thank God MJ is going to live through this, right? Is he is he out of intensive care?
I don't really want to say, but he's doing much better. And he's off the ventilator because he had to be on a ventilator for more than, like, 12 hours. And he's doing better from that. He lost a lot of blood. He needed 2 units of blood and, like, 4 liters of fluid to resuscitate him, basically fluid resuscitation. And he needed a 6-hour surgery to repair his hand and his wrist, which might not go back to fully functioning.
Okay.
The doctors are optimistic because this really awesome doctor, Dr. Judd, he was able to repair all the tendons, which there was only one tendon that wasn't damaged and severed. And then there was one artery that was severed and 2 ligaments. So
he's 21.
He's really lucky to have his hand.
Is that right? He's probably 21, 22, something like
that? He's 21, yeah. Just turned 21.
Yeah. Okay, well, stressed to hear that. Thank you for calling it in. Please give MJ our love. I would hope that the employers of this other man, you know, all that stuff, there's probably cameras out there. There's probably security cameras.
Yeah, we're looking into that, too, hopefully.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much. And tell your parents we send our best also, and lots of love.
I will. Thank you so much. And, hopefully we can bring this guy justice that he needs and regular appeal. So.
Yeah.
Thank you, Felicia.
Okay. Thank you, Summer. All right.
Okay. Bye.
Bye. Marshall, did we have another caller?
We couldn't hear each other.
Oh, my gosh. I saw who it was. John Cruz, please call us back. We are really hoping to hear from you. We're excited about the Hokulea coming in. I don't know if our guest Emma has heard about the Hokulea. Went around the world, the sailing canoe, took 3 years, circumnavigated the earth, great thing. And then John Cruz, who was one of the original sailors on the Hokulea, that was a big part of the whole renaissance of what happened in Hawaii, really proving that the mythology that maybe Hawaiians just somehow, luckily, haphazardly managed to end up on these islands, we were able to really see and reclaim all this heritage of navigational history. And so John Cruz was on that original sail. He was on the crew coming in as the Hokulea just returned to Hawaii a few months ago. And then he also is in the group that helped, the Hawaiian Studies group, that helped to build our Namahoe, which is our Kauai canoe. So since Hokulea was built, there's been about 8 or 9 more navigational canoes, and so it is a resurgence, and it's really a very, very beautiful reclaiming of, you know, what is coming and what's out there. And so lots of big things. And here on KKCR, you know, our kuleana, our responsibility is to be helping and looking at all kinds of different issues, topics. It's a community conversation. So I really want to applaud your organization, animalbalance.org.
Thank you.
That really does a lot of good for our community. And whatever you can come, no doubt that that will be very helpful. And people can look on that website.
Definitely. And we will do our absolute best to return and to work with all the different organizations so that we can provide humane solutions for the overpopulation of cats and dogs here.
Okay. Well, thank you on that one. And so we are almost ready for Jazz with John at the top of the hour. And so that will be a very good show. We always love what you have to do. And John, we love you. He's smiling back here. He does all kinds of things. It looks like Marshall. Can you touch him, please? I got my caller coming in. Okay. So,
I'm so sorry. I'm talking to John. He wanted to pass on a message.
Okay,
so
can
I'm
he come
notes.
On? Okay, because I keep missing my other person. Okay, can we just put him on, John? Can we just put
no,
you on?
No, he doesn't want to go on. I'm sorry.
All right. Okay. So, Jake.
Yes.
How are you doing?
Thank you for coming in.
We always have different volunteers and people who are helping, and you watch all this stuff, like that knifing in Hanalei. Did you hear about it? I just seen it on
I briefly heard about it. I didn't get too into it, but from what she just said, that the person was arrested and then released without being charged with anything, that seems a little bit troubling to me. First, that something like that even happened on this island. We're pretty fortunate. We don't have to deal with things like that too much. So when it does happen, it's kind of a shock. But then to hear that that's the way our county police department decided to handle it, really kind of surprises me. And I'm sure they have their reasons behind it. But for somebody to get into a physical altercation, and then have a weapon be used, somebody be severely hurt and hospitalized, and not really have any for them to just be released, is a little troubling to me. It's always tragic when something like that happens, but when it happens this close to home, it's definitely few and far between on Kauai.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that that's the case. When I was reading on this posting, though, apparently there was a recent stabbing of a girl, too, which is really, really super unusual. So, Marshall, so
yes.
We've had a handful of calls coming in.
Oh, my goodness, the phone is just hopping.
Yes, so people, when you call in, I love it when you actually go on the air. And we have another caller calling in, too.
Oh, yeah, well, okay. All right, I'll be back.
Okay. So we have a lot of people calling right at this last moment, and hopefully that they will go on the air. So here we are. Aloha, you're on the air. Are they on?
Sure.
Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, great. Hi, Felicia. It's me. You hear my voice every week, probably.
Okay.
I
can barely hear you. You're breaking up.
Okay, hold on. I can fix that.
Okay, and we're almost at the end of the show, so
okay.
I need
How
you
is
to
that?
Be
is that better?
A little bit better. So let's go quickly. What's up?
Okay, quickly. I just heard what the English lady said about the wonderful work they're doing with spaying and neutering. I used to belong to a group of women who caught feral cats and had them treated and then put back out in the wild. Is she participating in anything like that too?
Yes. We'll be doing a community sterilization program with the community cats that live outside, and that's what we're planning. At this point, Alley Cat Allies have funded for 200 humane cat traps and 250 transfer cages that we shipped out to Kauai last month, and the rum company here on island was so kind because they they were so kind because they gave us space on their container ship to bring them over for free.
Great.
So, yeah.
Thank you. And I can get your information
online. At animalbalance.org. Yes. Uh-huh. And you can also call the Kauai Humane Society at 808-632-0610.
Great. Can I ask one quick unrelated question?
Okay, make it really quick. Uh-huh. Really quick.
Do you know what happened? All of a sudden, this is totally unrelated, but I'm dying to know. All of a sudden, Trump, our guy in the Washington office there, has said that he's got a new, or that somebody's got a new program for another health insurance thing. What happened to Bernie Sanders' thing for a single pay? He had a big thing going, and almost everybody willing.
Well, to have single payer health care, I mean, we are moving closer to having that, and you know, I bet that's going to be another couple years hashing it out, whether we ever get there or don't get there. I mean, I would have to think at some point we will, because that is certainly, when I did live in England, I really appreciated what was going on there. But so thank you for your call. And
sure.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
Aloha.
Aloha. All right, Marshall,
yes.
The calls.
Yes, so the deal is that the Hokulea is sailing from Haleiwa to Hanalei.
Haleiwa, uh-huh.
Is that what I said? That's not what I said. Okay. On Saturday, and we'll arrive at Hanalei on Sunday
between
at 9 or 10 a.m.
Okay.
And she will stay 3 days. The crew will be going to Hanalei School, Kilauea School, and Kanui Kapono, and the students will also be going to the canoe to visit. And in terms of the Namahoe right now, they are putting brackets on her that would allow for motors to be attached, but at this moment, the community is focused on welcoming the Hokulea and the Hiki Analia.
Okay.
Right.
So, yeah. So I think the prayer that's out there is that those brackets go on quickly and that the brackets are able to be on there. At least that's definitely the profound hope and prayer of the young men who put all the work into the canoe. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding. Aloha, you're on the air. Thank you for holding.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Hey, I just wanted to comment on a couple things that were on earlier. I kind of was in and out on the show.
Okay, you're going to have to go real quick because the show is almost up.
Okay, so Carrie Little was talking about dredging the Hanalei River.
Mm-hmm.
I think another thing that would be beneficial would be the cutting back of the halbush. The halbush has gotten overgrown and
yep.
kind of changed the course of the river.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really predominant on the Maori side of the river.
So yes.
That would be one thing there. And I also wanted to comment on the whole dairy in Mahalapu. I'm really surprised that, you know, like, all of Kukui'ula is downwind from the proposed site. I'm just really surprised that that whole organization and all those resorts, even like the Sheridan, would be downwind, and possibly
yep.
even the Hyatt.
Yep.
So I'm finding it really hard to believe that they want that kind of smell, because I'm sure you remember the
yeah.
smell that you used to smell when you came down to Moloa. It's ridiculous, you know?
Well, but Moloa wasn't actually right there in the middle of a neighborhood and the visitor industry, so this is a more profound piece. So, 15 more seconds, and I've got one last caller that we're taking.
That's pretty much it. I just wanted to say that little piece.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah.
Aloha. Sure. So there was one last caller. So who was that? Marshall?
They couldn't hear me.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes I don't mention it because it's really...
Okay,
so... Here's a caller.
So we're going to take it, and they got like... 20 seconds, 30 seconds. So let's just go straight on the air. Aloha,
yes,
you're on the air.
Yes, I would like to go on the air.
Yes, you're on the air. Okay, we lost it. All right, so this has been Kauai Soapbox. Sometimes the phone is easier than others to make work, and we appreciate all our calls in, and we appreciate our health and well-being that's here. We're really stoked that Animal Balance has come over to help keep the animals in balance. And Emma, thank you so much for what you've done, and give our gratitude to the rest of your team, and that we hope that they've loved being on the island.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for the wonderful, warm welcome that we've received from being here. We can't wait to come back.
Okay. Jake, thank you. Marshall?
Thank you.
Thank you. Jake, aloha.
Aloha. All right. And... now we're going to hear the County Council report and then Jazz with John.